Hi, this is Melissa Ferrick, and you're listening to a track from my new album, Goodbye Youth.
Gotta put my feet in to see if the water's too cold. I gotta taste the broth to know if it needs salt, and I check my watch to see if I'm running on time, and I talk into the mirror sometimes, say to myself, you're gonna be fine, but I am a hypocrite. I sing about love, but I can't waltz, and I say I'm a romantic, just so it's never my fault. Of energy, keeping my smile long straight, making sure all the bills get paid, putting my big dreams away. But I am a hypocrite. I sing about love, but I can't waltz. And I say I'm gone wrong, 'cause I am afraid to leave you, but I know staying here is worse, so on the count of three, I'm ripping off this band-aid, I'm breaking the curse. I am a hypocrite. I sing about love, but I can't walk. I say that I'm a romantic, just so you don't think it's my fault. By a fire, sit right next to where I hurt, where I hurt, where I hurt. It's not my fault, not my fault. I am a hypocrite.
And I'm a lesbian. I don't like nothing swinging between their
Hello, you are listening to show number 43 of The Lesbian Mafia, and I am your host, Shazam. Hi there, I'm your host, Sandy. I have a very exciting show for you today. That was just Melissa Ferrick that you were listening to. And I have her as a guest on this show today. So I'm so excited to bring you part one of a very interesting expose on Melissa Ferrick. And she was so wonderfully generous with her time that I have two parts of this interview. So I'll be playing part one for this show and part two for the next show, which I will be posting next week. So Before we get started, I just want to read a part of a speech that the Prime Minister of Spain, José Luis Rodríguez, made, I think it was in 2005, after gay marriage and adoption of children by gay couples was made legal in Spain. So I'll just read part of that to you now. And I'm reading off the web, so it's going to be a little bit... We are not legislating honorable members for people far away and not known by us. We are enlarging the opportunity for happiness to our neighbors, our co-workers, our friends, and our families. At the same time, we are making a more decent society, because a decent society is one that does not humiliate its members. In the poem, The Family, our gay poet Luis Cernuda was sorry because, quote, how does a man live in denial, in vain, by giving rules that prohibit and condemn? Today, the Spanish society answers to a group of people who during many years have been humiliated, whose rights have been ignored, whose dignity has been offended, their identity denied, and their liberty oppressed. Today, the Spanish society grants them the respect they deserve, recognizes their rights, restores their dignity, affirms their identity, and restores their liberty. Now, you can find this article online. You can just Google José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero speech on gay marriage, and you could read the rest of that on there. But it's an amazing speech. This guy put his entire career behind gay marriage and the adoption of children by gay people. And I know that they can marry in England, but I think there are some stipulations, and I'm not sure what it is, but I should have looked it up before I started this show, but I think Spain is the only country who fully embrace gay rights, is how we should say that, I guess. But the reason why I want to just talk about this briefly before we get started on with Melissa is because if you think that there's nothing that you can do about what just happened with Prop 8 and Florida and Arizona and Arkansas, if you think that there's nothing you can do, you're dead wrong. And if you're in California and you're gay and you have two legs, if you haven't at least attended one protest, at this rate, if we continue the way it's going now, back and forth, you get the rights, you don't, you get civil unions, maybe you get marriage, this place gets marriage, this state gets it, that state doesn't, this state you get it and then you take it away and then we've got to fight and you got to raise more money, this one now and the Mormons and the other, back and forth, back and forth. Do you know how long it will be before we get marriage? At the rate that it's going now, it won't happen for 500 to 1,000 years if this continues. We cannot keep playing games back and forth with all this bullshit. It's bullshit. Do you understand that this is bureaucratic bullshit? Do you understand this is red tape nonsense? We have to stand up and speak in a way that is clear to them. We can't ape other people's civil rights movements anymore because nobody wants us. Nobody wants gay people. They don't like us. Nobody likes us. We are the only ones that can do this for ourselves. And if you're not out there making a lot of noise, I don't know, maybe you got to check your head. But there's a lot that you can do. If you can't protest or maybe you're scared of getting shot or something, I don't know. But there's a lot that you can do. And number one on my list is you can write to officials. You can write letters to the White House. Write to Obama. Let them know you are a tax-paying citizen. You are gay. You pay your taxes. Do you pay your taxes? Do you look at your check? Do you look at FICA and all this and the other stuff? Do you look at all the taxes that come out of your check every week? How they take your money? They like your money. And they like your vote. Right? What happened with Prop 8 happened to all of us because if they see that they can do this, they're going to start coming for all of us. The Queen of Spain just made a very bold statement last week. And actually, I should find it while I have you here and read you what the Queen of Spain said. Please hold the line. Okay. If these people want to live together, dress as grooms, and get married, they might have the right to do so or not, depending on the laws of their countries. But they shouldn't call it marriage, because it isn't. There are many possible names. Social contract of union. This is what Queen Sophia said. Okay, so you see how people who want to give us these different names, this is their mindset. This is the way they think of us. You know, and then I'll write a blog, and like these strange extremists, they try to, you know, put the focus on things that it isn't on. If you don't want your rights, fine. You know what? There are a lot of women who today benefit, who think they're feminists, but they're not. They only benefit from feminism. And they have feminists to thank for everything that they're able to do today. And if it wasn't for those women acting like maniacs, shaving their heads, burning their bras, acting, you know, a lot more aggressive than most women should be acting. But if they didn't, there's a lot that you wouldn't have today that, in fact, you still do not have today. You're still, women are still making 70 cents to men's dollar. It's still happening. It's 2008, but you are still making 70 cents to a man's dollar. Does that make anybody mad? Does that make anybody think? And that is just a slice of the entire pie of all of the rights that are still denied women today. That a lot of women do not have the eye to see through all of the filters, to see where sexism is. You know, a lot of women can't even recognize sexism, and they participate in their own sexism. And I find that gay people do that also. They do that to their own community by being jealous of other gay people who are doing something that they feel, you know, oh, that should be mine. You know, you become envious of other gay people. They try to hold each other down. You eat your own. If you eat your own, someone's going to come and eat you too. And not in a way that you want. But you've got to realize that when someone is saying something directly to you, if they say, I think marriage is between a man and a woman, I don't believe them. Believe them. Anyway, there's more that you can do also, but I would implore you to write to your officials, write to the Supreme Court, go to the protests. And talk about it until you're blue in the face. Are you tired of it? I'm tired of it. And we don't have to try to make them comfortable. They're never going to be comfortable. That's the game. You understand how trying to get your mom's approval or your dad's approval, and you always go over to them with something new and they never approve. It's like that's their game, is to never approve. It's never going to happen. You have to take your rights. They're yours. You have to take them. They belong to you. You know, in between hanging out on the weekends and getting loaded and chasing around after women, maybe we could take 5 minutes. Sign, you know, one of those things you get in the mail, sign them. If you think, hey, you know what, I could do a podcast like this person does, do it. Do it. Who cares? Buy a mic. Get one at Best Buy for $20. Stick it in your computer and start talking. Because they are very, very paranoid about our presence on the web. At some point, they're going to start really sifting through the internet. They're already talking about bringing up the fairness doctrine. There's a lot going on right now. A lot of good and a lot of very not good things coming. So keep your eyes open. Pay attention. Don't live in a fog. I don't want to be married. I don't care about being married. But neither do a lot of straight people. Some straight people don't want to be married, but they have the right to. And sometimes when they're 55, 60, they turn around and they say, you know what? And they get married. They have that right. I should have that right. A lot of different movements can move ahead at the same time. One doesn't have to sacrifice for the other. We can have feminism. We can have women's rights. We can have the black civil rights. We can have gay civil rights. We can have all kinds of civil rights. Steadily moving forward. If we are even 10%, which I know that we're not 10%, I know that that's bullshit. We're not only 10%. That's a lie. That's a lie. But whatever. If we all got behind one cause and we stopped pandering to these people, trying to make them comfortable, make them accept. They're never going to accept us. So whether you're nice or you're not, they're not going to accept you. You have to take your rights. Listen, I've been talking plenty and I have such a wonderful show. So just shut me up anytime, really. Enough of me. But I'm going to bring on Melissa now. This is part one. And I'm having a contest. It's official. Ding, ding, ding. This is the contest. The first person to leave a comment on my MySpace page with their top three favorite Melissa Ferrick songs will get an autographed CD signed to you. So that's that. I hate being so serious, you know, starting off a show so serious, but we're in such precarious times. We're in such serious times that, you know what I mean? You know what I'm trying to say? I have pumpkin seeds. Pumpkin seeds are supposed to have iron in them. So they're supposed to be, I guess, good for you. Keep your iron up, you know, because women, during your childbearing years, that's what they call it. A lot of women are prone to be, a little low on their iron and they don't even know it. All right. So let's get started with Melissa. And I can't tell you how ecstatic I am. If I could jump up and down without hurting myself, I would. If I could just shout right now, just to express the happy emotions, I would shout. But, it's rude to shout. It's rude. I have my facial massager. I massage around my eyebrow area because it gets very tense in that area on certain days, especially when it rains. Do you want to hear me complain about, stuff like my sinuses? Because I can go on. I can. I also have cashews here. I like to have little healthy snacks around me. I would prefer to be eating disgusting filth like ringdings, things of this nature. We're on Reepso Radio. So, I just thought I'd give them a shout out. And I don't think I like anything that I've said in the past 3 or 4 minutes. I don't like not one word of anything that I've said. But it's like I can't stop talking. When is it going to stop? All right. I bring you the one, the only, the magnificent, the amazing Melissa Ferrick. I do. How lucky am I? I have Melissa Ferrick on the telephone. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing really good. A little nervous and panicked because I'm rushing and stuff like this already panics me. So it's like...
It's just on top of it, just to stress you out a little more. We thought we would make your subway late. Yes, no, it's going to be fine.
Okay. Thank you for calming me.
Of course.
So what color couch are you looking for?
Well, I don't know. I thought I found the couch, and then the guy told me if I paid in cash that I would get 10% off. And then I went to get it, and then he was like, oh, no, sorry, that's only on the things that aren't already on sale. And actually, that actually ended Tuesday.
Yeah, he was hustling you.
He's lying. Yeah, so I left there, and now I'm kind of, perusing online. And
right.
I live in a house that was built in 1850. But it's been, redone, you know what I mean? I mean, I didn't redo it. When I got it 5 years ago, the guy had kind of redone it,
Okay.
And so it's an awkward-shaped room. It's kind of like a rectangle room, and there's a fireplace in the room, and there's four windows in this room. So there's only one place the couch can go, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I find couches really difficult.
Yeah, well, I've only bought one couch in my whole life.
Okay.
So, except for when I was in college and I just had a futon like everybody else,
Right. Right. But then don't you feel like you have to sit on it and everything and, lay down? I have to do everything on it before I buy it.
Oh, yeah. I'm laying right down on the thing. And it's never big enough. You know what I mean? I'm the kind of person that, because I lay on my couch a lot. I watch TVs. I like to snuggle with my friends on the couch. I like to be, hanging out, watching the game and
right.
Lighting the fire and, and everything just seems so stiff and, country contemporary, you know what I mean? It's I'm not country contemporary.
No, what style are you?
They're calling me city modern or something like this. Yeah, that's what the guy is like, Larry, you have a little contemporary style, you know? But they try to make you feel really good about yourself, you know? Like, they're like, oh, he's like, I can just tell you're picking very contemporary colors, and it makes you feel good, you know? And then he's like, yeah, and that's $1,700. And you're like, what? You know, I just need a 90-inch piece of furniture. Like, you can't find me something that isn't going to support my body weight for me to sleep on in my, you know, while I watch a movie in my living room, to have like the right throw pillow. And then, you know, I'm so not gay that way. I don't really care about the throw pillows. You know what I mean? I throw them on the ground. Very Larry David. So.
This is like the easiest interview I've ever done.
It's great. I can just talk about my day. It's terrible. Well, it went from, like, I was at the movies with my mother, my aunt, and my grandmother, so my mother's mother, so three generations of women, watching The Secret Life of Bees, which was amazing to do with them. You know, so I went from that at 12:30 matinee with my Nana, you know, in a matter of, like, 4 hours. Living room guy hell. The headache, and I went and got a cheesesteak. So that made me feel better.
So you had a full day.
Yes, I've had a full day, yeah, and I, you know, you have to top it off with greasy, meaty food that you shouldn't eat. Anyway,
so
that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to buy a couch. Do you understand that I've already thrown my couch out? I'm sitting on my friend's couch that she already gave me. This couch is worse than the couch I already threw out.
But you do have a new album coming out, though.
Yeah, I do. It's out. It's out. Well, actually, it's not out in stores, but it's out at shows. And, yeah, it's been about, I guess, maybe a month, maybe not even a month that it's been available. I think I did a Midwest tour, which I just got home from a little while ago. That went really well, like Chicago, Ann Arbor. Where do you live? Where are you?
I'm in New York City, in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm coming there in December.
Oh,
yes, which you probably don't know yet.
Where are you going?
I'm coming there in December for, yeah, it's just not up on the site yet, but I'll be around for right around the holiday show, probably in Brooklyn at the Bell House again.
Oh, very nice. We'll have
that new room. Have you been there yet?
No.
Oh my God, it's so amazing.
Really? We'll have to write that down.
Yeah, it's like the nicest room in New York, I think. It blows away any place I've played in Manhattan, too. It's unbelievable. You got to go.
Yeah, I may just...
Third Avenue or Fourth Avenue, and maybe...
You were just here.
Yeah, just a little bit. I was the first show to ever happen there.
Yeah, that's...
In New York, where the heck is Brooklyn? There it is.
Right, Brooklyn. Brooklyn!
Bell House, yeah, Brooklyn, New York. 7th Street, 149 7th Street. So it's 7th and 3rd Avenue.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, that should be really fun. So I know we're going to throw a date in down in the city, and I know I'm also going to be there in February, right around Valentine's Day. So,
perfect. We'll put that in the show notes and everything.
Cool.
Why did you title the... I mean, this is going to be like a typical question. Why did you title the album Goodbye Youth?
Well, there's a couple reasons why. One is that I didn't have a title. And so Brenna kept... She was like, you know, since you haven't ever made a solo album like this, which is bizarre, but since you haven't done this, she was suggesting that I self-title it. Which I also thought was a great idea because I don't have a self-titled record. And, you know, she was like, this is great. It's like a new beginning and, you know, whole new chapter, and it's you solo, and this is what your fans love. And you could call this, like, you know, just Melissa Ferrick, because that's who it is. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really good idea, but it just seemed like we kept tossing it around. We kept tossing around other titles, and I had forgotten about the song Goodbye Youth only because it was really the first song I wrote for this record.
Okay.
I know I wrote it when I was on tour with Ani, and that was right around my birthday.
When was your birthday? Trying to figure out your sign.
September 21st. I'm a Virgo. Yeah, I'm a Virgo with a Gemini moon.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Virgo
is... It's a rising Gemini moon, and... Yeah.
Right?
Birthday, Aries, and then, yeah, Cancer, which just kind of saved my life, and then... Everything else is in Scorpio, so that doesn't really help. Where's my record? Here it is. I'm trying to find the names of the songs. So, yeah, it really was like I had forgotten about that. That's what I'm trying to remember right now, is if I had any other songs on here. You know what? Real.
Okay.
Which is a song about a friend of mine holding her baby. To me, that's what that song was about, and seeing that pure love between this little girl and her mom. I wrote that song in, let's say, July or August, and then I wrote Goodbye Youth in September, right around my birthday, and then that was on that tour, and that was a really, you know, that tour that I got to do with Ani was really huge for me, not only because of the number of people I got to play in front of, and the fact that I got to support an artist that I so admire, you know,
sure.
and be around other friends of mine, you know, like,
yeah, sure.
I mean, Allison Miller's your drummer, and Todd Sickov, you know, like, I've just known a lot of those people for so long.
And how did that come about? How did you end up on that gig with Ani?
You know, she came and saw me play in New Orleans when she was home at a club there that I was playing at. Her tour manager at the time invited her to come, and I mean, I'd been hearing about her forever, and we had the same agent, so I know that she's heard my name over and over again.
Okay, right.
And so this was just the right time. You know, she was home, she was in New Orleans, and they were like, Melissa's playing, and she was like, oh, let's go.
Yeah, what a likely, like, I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner, honestly.
I think a lot of people have said that, and I think that's what, how, you know, if you asked Ani, I think she would tell you the same thing. I mean, we were kind of like sitting in her kitchen going, like, and so we hung out in New Orleans for the weekend, and then we did another gig together over the summer up in Canada, and I ended up spending time with her in Buffalo at her place, and became good acquaintances, I would say, at that point. And then she asked me to do the tour, and you know, it was just was kind of like a very quick getting to know, you know, like it was kind of immediate. We're the same age, you know, and different people, but coming from a similar kind of past, do you know what I mean? Like, been
mm-hmm.
through the same life zone, you know what I'm saying? Same generation, same singer-songwriter, independent, you know, being a woman trying to make a living.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have a family, which she's, you know, being a little more successful at than I am right now. You know, like all the funny things. She's got a great sense of humor and
right.
She's a great person. So it made perfect sense. And I wrote Goodbye Youth on that tour. And then right after that tour, I ended a relationship. So I was, you know, I was in a transitional phase and also kind of at this height, so to speak, of my career, where I felt like I was around peers that were playing in rooms that I'd always wanted to play, and I just felt accepted, and I felt appreciated musically in a way that I really needed and had been kind of longing for a while, getting out of the bars, you know, getting into a place where I was, you know, where you're fed catered food every night and somebody drives you, you know, just taken care of on a different level, at a success level like Ani has. And it was really nice to slip into that. And
yeah, you could get used to that.
Oh, I could get used to it. I did get used to it real fast. Yeah, you don't want it to end, you know.
Right.
And there's something lovely about that, to see that that can happen for independent artists, you know. And,
yeah, yeah.
And to also see that she shares that with a lot of people.
Yes.
It was just really heartwarming. It gave me hope, and it rejuvenated me, which is, I think, what... I don't want to speak for everybody, but I think that that's what Ani's music does for a lot of people. In the most simple way, it rejuvenates you. You know, you feel good when you leave. There's a political twinge to it. Everybody's taken care of. The crew's good. The musicians are fantastic.
Yes.
The music's good. It's like, this doesn't suck, you know?
Completely.
Can't we all just get along like this?
Completely professional outfit, right?
Oh, my God,
yeah. Yeah,
just, and, like, friendly. Like, not egotistical, not... It's just kind of like the Bowery, but like, you know, maybe like five times bigger every night. And you get like, you're eating on like a plate with a fork. In my life, I eat like on a paper plate with a plastic fork. You know what I mean? And I load my own gear. It's really the only difference. You're playing to 5,000 people instead of 500. Actually, not 5,000. I think three times as many. I think 1,500 instead of 500. And you just upgrade your utensils, really. That's the only difference. Other than that, there's no difference in ego or expectation or anything. It's just, it was awesome, you know. And so I wrote a lot on that tour also, because I didn't have to drive, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I had time. I couldn't believe how much time I had.
Right.
But I remember saying to her, I was like, so this is how you write so many songs. Like, you have to, like, ride around. And this is unbelievable, you know. I kept trying to pick something up to bring it into the venue, and there was, like, nothing there. It was the weirdest. I was like, I don't carry anything? Like, what is going on? Yeah, it was great. So, but it was a difficult time for me, too, because I knew in September that my relationship was over, you know.
Mm-hmm. And were you still on tour while it was ending?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you were probably going through the whole, like, arguing and stuff and depression and...
Yeah, no, I mean, we hadn't broken up, like, we were still together, but it was, you know what I mean, like, it had been a year of trying to work it out, trying to go and seek outside help and see if we could do it, you know, really, like, with all of the best intentions. There was no, nobody did anything wrong, you know what I mean? There wasn't, like, a, or there wasn't an affair or anything like that. It was just, it wasn't working, you know?
Those are the worst breakups because there's no one to blame. And I guess it ran, is that what happened? It ran its course?
It ran its course, yeah. And I think, you know, I'd never dated another musician before. I was with a musician, Natalia Zuckerman, obviously was my girlfriend. And I don't know if you knew that already, but that's who I was with.
I did.
For years, so.
I've actually played her music on the show, like some earlier shows.
Fantastic, yeah.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, and she's, I adore her, you know what I mean? I fell madly in love with her, but I'd never been with another musician, and I don't, you know, this is only a difficult subject only because I really don't want to speak for her because she could have had a very different experience, and I haven't spoken to her in a while, but I do know that for me it was just like, I'm not in, you know, I've made a commitment to not be in a relationship now for a while, and I've been really holding strong onto that and trying to be alone, and really for the first time in my adult life, which is its own crime unto itself, but it's just what happened to me, you know, the serial monogamy, and it's really nice to just be alone, and I think I really needed that, even when I was, in the last 6 months that Tali and I were together, it wasn't that I wanted to break up with her, it's that I really just wanted to be alone. Do you know, I don't know if...
I absolutely do, I love being alone.
Like, I don't know if I could ever live with anybody again. You know what I mean? Like, I always end up, I did that lesbian thing, or like your girlfriends, and then you move in. I do everything way too fast, you know? So that kind of was like, the big heavy weight on my back was just like, everybody just leave me alone. Like, I just want to be by myself for a while and do this music thing and figure out what color I like the walls to be, pick out my own couch, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I just haven't ever done that. I've always had a quote-unquote wife, you know? And Natalia is not that. You know, she's a touring, working musician, too. So there wasn't kind of the girlfriend at home.
You know, yeah, and I wonder, when did you guys ever get a chance to see each other, even? Actually?
Not very often. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The first year we were together, we toured together. So that was, you know, it was like having a glorified affair with the person you're on tour with.
Which, right.
You know, I should have learned a lot sooner was a really good idea because I probably would have had a lot more fun in my youth, but I didn't. So that kind of ties into the whole title of the record, which was just like the aspects of youth that I'm saying goodbye to or whatever. Or it's not really goodbye like in a sad way at all. It's more like, okay, like enough with the covering up with production, enough with making decisions based on what I think the other person wants me to say. Enough. You know, I can't do it anymore. And that exhaustion is that being really, really tired of that, like to the point where you're done actually doing it, not just saying that you're done doing it, but being done doing it.
Yeah.
Real freeing thing. And it feels like the first steps into true adulthood for me.
Mm-hmm.
At 37, that's a little late, but my mother always said I was a little behind, so.
And I love that you're not shy about your age and stuff, because it really irritates me when I see people put the number 99 on there, like for their age, they put 99. Like, you know, nobody's supposed to know how old you are after like 35, I guess. You know,
yeah, it's ridiculous,
like,
isn't it?
What is that? What is that? Like just sexism and stuff? We're afraid of being old?
I think it's totally just socialized, you know, it's patriarchy, basically. For everything.
Let's get started on that now, why don't we?
You know, it's just...
this is the perfect platform for it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why we have to keep saying that 40 is the new 30, like 30 is better than 40. I mean, I don't really want to be 30 again. I don't know about you, but it's like, I think it's all about bodies and the way you look, you know?
Yeah, and it sounds cliche, but also how you feel. If you feel like an old, crabby, rotted person, then you're going to reflect that. It has nothing to do with being in your 30s or 40s. I know 25-year-olds that are, like, they never laugh. They never laugh, and they act very old, and so, I mean, I don't really get it, why everybody's lying. And, like, you know who else doesn't lie? And I love that, like, Ellen and Roe and...
Yeah.
Who else?
Love those two.
Yeah, like, they don't lie. Like, I love that. It's so, I don't know, I think they're wonderful examples of aging with some dignity.
And grace, yeah. Well, Melissa Etheridge, you know?
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, my God. Katie, I opened for her this last year. Oh, my God, that was amazing.
Yeah, that must have been intense.
Talk about a gorgeous woman. I mean,
yeah.
God, can act like that in another 10 years, you know? Like,
Yeah. She's like a not of this earth kind of beauty.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I remember, it's, you know, Emmylou Harris is another great example of a woman that I just think... glides instead of walks, you know. I met her very briefly at a little affair, and just beautiful, you know, with her long, beautiful gray hair just in it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good for us.
Yeah, exactly.
What's your coming out story? Do you have one?
Yeah. Mine's awesome. I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I liked girls before that, because I really liked this one girl in high school, and I didn't know why I was looking at her in the locker room and stuff like that. So, and I was the quintessential tomboy, you know. definitely had a gender identity issue when I was very young. My mother knew that I was gay, she said, from the time I was probably 2 or 3. I was going to be different, you know, or gay, basically. Same thing.
That's really gay.
Yeah, really gay. Thought I was, you know, everybody thought I was a boy, that whole thing, you know, Carrie Moore Wood.
Mm.
Everybody always said I looked like my dad, and I was just like my dad, even though now I realize that I'm actually a lot more like my mother and look way more like my mother than I. So that's a whole new thing to kind of grasp, you know.
Are you afraid of turning into your mother?
No, I actually find it to be quite relieving. But no, no, I love my dad. Both of them. I'd turn into a combination of the both of them. But but so when I was 16, I went to the Berklee College of Music summer program.
Okay.
Which is a 5-week program in Boston to study music, basically.
Okay.
It's not just for high school students, though. It's for anybody who wants to ultimately go to music school. It's kind of a place to get your feet wet and see if Berklee makes sense for you. So you have to get accepted and everything. And so I got accepted and I went, and I commuted because I grew up in Ipswich. So one night I was hanging out in the dorms, you know, late kind of a thing, and there was this girl named Jamie who was from Florida, and she was 27. And I just remember thinking that she was a lot older than me. She was, like, old. Do you know what I mean? Like, when you're 16, 27 is old.
Right.
So I ended up in her room somehow. I don't really know how. But the next thing I know...
What do you mean you don't know how you ended up in her room?
I was probably... We were probably, like, having some beers or... You know what I mean? Like, I don't think... I definitely wasn't drunk because I remember the whole thing. But, like, because I was usually home at that point. But for some reason, I must have just stayed late to hang out or something.
Okay.
And, so I was in her dorm room, and I was sitting on her bed, and she took her shirt off and had her bra on and was singing me Janis Joplin songs. I mean, this is so gay. Greatest thing ever. So she was like blasting Janis Joplin on this boombox, and this is 1987, you know? So she's blasting Janis Joplin and singing along, and she was there as a singer, and she had an amazing voice, and I was like, is equally horrified as I was turned on. Like, it was like, I didn't know how to get out, but all I wanted to do was leave, but I couldn't move. It was like that, you know? And I remember she said to me, you know, don't you? And I was like, what are you talking about? She showed me pictures of her friends from Florida, and they were all girls. And they were all, like, just had their bras on. That's all I remember. They probably were bikinis, but what I saw was, like, underwear. And I was, like, freaked out.
They sound like a lot of fun.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I probably have hung out with them. But anyway. Anyway, so she's like, you know, don't you? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. And she said, well, you know that you're a lesbian, you know? And I was like, no, I'm not. I have a boyfriend. Here's his picture, because, you know, I was in high school, so I had this boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we ended up taking a walk. So we walked down Mass Ave to the Christian Science Monitor.
Oh, wow.
And we were sitting at the Christian Science Monitor's reflection pool, how appropriate, which is this outdoor water pool thing, you know. And I was, like, flicking the water at her. Like, I was flirting with her.
All right.
And I remember she said, if you flick that water at me one more time, I'm going to kiss you. And I remember thinking, like, everything in me wanted to flick her with the water again, but I, at the same time, was nervous that she was actually really going to do it, you know.
Right.
So I flicked the water, and as soon as I flicked it, I got up and started to walk away, like run away. And so she came after me, and then she was like, get back here. So I walked back, and she had me come closer to her. It was like that quintessential, like, no, come closer. Very sweet, very sexy. And I remember her kissing me, and I remember feeling completely and absolutely, like, at peace. Just surrendered, you know. I remember feeling her breasts on my body. I remember how good that felt. I felt like I was home, you know. I felt safe and comforted.
So wait a minute, though. Did you cheat on your boyfriend?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, but that's 16, there's, you know what I mean? And at that same time that she was, that we were kissing, standing outside, like in public, you know?
Right.
At the same time that I'm having this, like, oh my God, I'm home moment, like, yeah, this is it. A man and a woman walked by us.
Oh, wow.
And I felt them look at us, and I, maybe they didn't, but to me, I felt in that moment of glory, the instant withdrawal of that glory and shame that came over me, and the fear and the hiding that happened. And I remember I went home, and I got really depressed. I remember I took my bed off the frame. I put my bed on the floor, and I pretty much barricaded myself in my room for, I would say, a few days. My parents didn't really know what was going on with me. And then I took a drive with my dad, and he asked me if I was all right. And I told him that I had kissed a girl and that I thought I might be gay. And he asked me if I wanted to talk to somebody about it. And I said yes. And so he found me a therapist to talk to. And I went and started to see a woman who was amazing, a friend of a friend of the family kind of a thing, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
My parents are really liberal.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I grew up in an incredibly liberal, fantastic, hippie, art-driven household.
Okay.
And then...
my mother took me to a nun.
Oh, really? Yeah, my mother grew up with the nun slapping her on the wrist for being left-handed, so she was, you know, she had turned away from that.
Right.
So, you know, and at that point I talked to the therapist for a long time, and then we had some sessions with my entire family, and I came out to my entire family in a therapy session. And I remember my mom cried and said she knew it was either going to be that I was gay or that I was going to quit school. And she didn't know which one was worse. No, she didn't say that. But I remember my dad specifically was sad for me that my life was going to be harder.
Right, right.
That's what he said. The only thing that makes me sad is that your life is going to be harder than it already is as a woman.
Mm.
I love you no matter who you love. It doesn't matter. You know, I accept you for who you are. But your life will be more difficult, and that breaks my heart because I don't want you to struggle, but because that's because I'm your father, you know, you're going to struggle.
Yeah.
And my mother told me a few days later that she had prayed to God, which is an important part of her life, a very new way now as she's older, but at that time it was still kind of within the church. And
okay.
She said that when she prayed to God about this, that the answer she got in her heart was that God wouldn't let me fall in love with another woman if it wasn't all right with him. Which I thought was pretty much the most glorious thing anyone could say.
Sure.
You know? So it was great. I mean, you know.
And do you think that your father was right when he said that your life was going to be harder? And?
Yeah, I think I don't mind the hard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel hard to me. It feels revolutionary.
Right.
I feel a part of the world that is about change, you know?
Right.
And that includes more than just gay people. It includes people of color and people from different places and different faiths. And, I mean, I feel a kinship with all human beings who are in their own struggle, you know?
Right.
I feel a part of the struggle for equal rights, you know, which I think is pretty apparent right now, especially politically, you know, with what's going on in California and all the great stuff we have going on, getting Obama elected and everything. And, you know, there's a lot at stake right now.
Yeah, well, there's a lot happening in California. They're running the streets down there right now.
That's right, they are. That's right.
They're pillaging and...
Yep.
I wish they would pillage and loot sometimes, you know? Like, I wish they wouldn't be so...
You gotta get angry, I think, you know?
Yeah, I wish wouldn't be so damn peaceful.
I know.
But I guess that's the right way to go about it, is to, you know, make some noise. And I think they get very scared when we're out in the streets.
I think that it's all fear, you know? I mean, I think homophobia is really deep.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's, you know, and what's weird is I feel like racism is buried deeper than homophobia. You know, people who are racist won't use the N-word, but they'll call you a fag, you know?
So you think that, you mean the homophobia is deeper?
No, I think it's more on the surface. In other words, I think that, like, name-calling and hate-mongering is still tolerated to an extent on gay people.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I completely agree.
You know what I mean? Like, you can walk down the street And if you're a bunch of frat boys are walking down the street, they're more likely to bash two gay guys coming out of a gay club.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Tags and do that whole thing, or taunt and stuff, I think. Although I could be wrong. I mean, I'm thinking more only because I'm from the Northeast and the type of violence that happens up here, there is violence against gays around here.
Sure.
You know, but maybe in other parts of the country, there's still race violence happening. I mean, we saw a black church, get burned the other day, so.
Right.
I could be wrong about that, but.
Do you think Obama needs to be pushed a little more with the gay thing?
No.
No.
I mean, I've heard him say gay in every major speech he's given. I mean, he brought up gays in his speech the other day. He says the word gay, which is a huge step forward.
Right.
You know, even there's a certain amount of homophobia within the black community that he's going, you know, he's definitely standing up as a black man saying equal rights for gay people. And I'm pretty sure that there's a large contingency of the African-American community that doesn't want gay people to get rights because they don't think it's the same as...
It's not an equal struggle.
Right, the rights movement and stuff, yeah.
Well, what's your take on when he says, you know, marriage is between a man and a woman, and then in the same breath says, I don't support DELMA, but I don't support marriage, but I support civil unions. What do you make of that? Because that, to me, is very confusing. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's political. I think before you get elected, I don't think it's probably a smart idea to say that you're for gay marriage. But I don't know. I think that's how Barack Obama feels. I think he's telling the truth. I think he believes in civil unions, and he believes that it should be faith-based, don't you think?
Marriage?
Yeah. Or do you think it should be, I mean, I don't know.
You know, I have so many feelings on this. I would hate to turn this into some kind of political thing right now, because what if we disagree and then you end up hating me?
I really don't know how. I mean, my whole thing is that marriage to me is such a personal thing, and it's a faith-based thing, but I believe that everybody should have the right to get married if they want to. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like if you want to get married, then you should be allowed to do that. Doesn't mean I'm going to do it.
You know, yeah, right. Yeah, I don't even want to ever get married, ever.
Me either. So, but I don't want to not have a right because I'm gay.
Right. I agree with you there.
Which is why I'm going to support, I get that this is a quote-unquote a civil liberty. See, I have no issue with the civil union thing. I'm down with that. Like, that's fine. As a matter of fact, I don't really want to be part of the marriage contingency anyway, so I don't really, in some ways, I like being queer, and I like living a queer lifestyle. That's why, one of the reasons, I mean, I am gay because I'm gay, but I'm also queer because, you know, the way I live my life is queer. You know, like, I don't want to go to a church and get married and wear a dress and have a big party and get registered somewhere and get a bunch of presents. I have no interest in that, you know?
Yeah, but I think that you should have that right as a citizen, as a tax-paying citizen. You should have that right. It shouldn't be taken away from you.
Right.
I wouldn't want to do that either.
Exactly.
I really wouldn't want to do it either. But
the right to do it should be mine, just like I have the right to vote and I have the right to, you know,
make
employment anywhere I want and go to a college if my school, you know, all that stuff. Like, yeah, everybody should have the same rights. I mean, a human right is a human right.
Yeah, what about when you're 65 or 70 and your lover is ill and you need to be on each other's insurance because whatever the healthcare situation is going to be then, but what if you need to be on their insurance?
Yeah, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's a matter of life and death. I mean, you know, it can...
I think where the civil union thing comes into play, right? Because that would... Well, then why not just call it marriage? What's so frightening to these straight people about having it be okay for people of the same sex to use the word marriage?
Yeah.
But what is it taking away from you that's so important to you?
It's not what it's taking away from them. It's that they want to take it away from us. They don't want us to have it.
Yeah. But I think the question to them is, what are you so afraid of? You know, that's the question to my neighbor's friends. You know what I mean? Why is this so scary to you? That me being able to get married, what does that take away from you? What does that take away from your marriage? That takes away the validity of your marriage? Really? Wow. That's pretty intense.
Yeah, it is.
You know, that I would affect your life that much.
I think maybe they're just trying to keep some order in their world, because maybe they feel like it's just, you know, you start mixing up the files and they can't find anything. Like, if we start being able to get married, then I think it just confuses them. Like, I'm trying to put myself in a straight person's mind.
Right. How's like, that going?
I'm very confused and I think I'm gay. I think that, like, I would probably feel like, okay, you know, what's in this?
What's left for me?
Yeah.
What makes me special? Now I have nothing that separates me from all of them.
And I can't, I can't seem to find myself. I hope that I come out of this straight person by the time this interview is over. I hope I stop being straight.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
No, but I feel like if I was straight, I definitely would not be anti-gay. I know that. But it might be confusing to see gay people have the same lifestyle as me when I would probably think they're so different.
Right, just like they thought black people were.
Yes.
I just saw that Secret Life of Bees today, and they said that that woman, and that she went and got the right to vote, because, of course, black men could vote before black women could vote.
And before white women could vote, too.
Yes, before women could vote, black men were allowed to vote, yeah.
Right. It's men first in this country.
Of course, yeah, clearly.
It's not ladies first. They need to change that thing around.
Ladies.
It's men first.
I just don't understand what the problem is when you say the word civil rights. Civil means civilian. And,
right,
you know,
right.
If civil rights and human rights are for all humans and all civilians, and then what is the problem? How can some rights be for some people and some rights not for other people? If we're all people, then we should equal rights as equal.
Right.
Equal rights. You don't distinguish between, you know, people with Alzheimer's or kids with Asperger's or white people or Asian American people or gay people or, I mean, if they're all people. So
yeah.
Everybody should have the same rights.
Yeah.
So if we've now, you know, mixed church and state, which is, this is the problem, this is where it gets sticky, that now suddenly what happens in the church is decided by the government, which is totally screwed up.
Yeah.
You know, and so I don't need to have the right to get married at the Catholic Church down the street, but I need to have the right to get married at City Hall.
Right, and it should be called a marriage.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you're with that?
Yeah, I'm with it. I'll support that. Yeah.
How do we do that? How do we do it?
We just keep reiterating that it's civil rights. I'm a civilian, and I deserve to have equal rights. Why don't you want me to have the same rights as you?
Hmm.
That's all. I'm just going to keep asking that question.
Right.
Straight people that don't like gay marriage. Why? Why is it not okay with you that I have the same human rights that you have?
Right.
I shouldn't have any rights then. You can't just give me some of the rights.
Yeah, Melissa, don't start giving them ideas.
You know what I mean? Yeah, right. Because in that case, you might as well put us all gay people, like, just give us one of the states. We'll all go there.
I think that would be nice.
Florida. It's great.
I think Florida sounds really nice right now, this time of year.
Yeah, right. Rosie's already down there. We got Miami, and, you know, Cubans love gay people, so we'll be fine. We'll have great food.
And we love Cubans.
We love the Cubans, and, you know, they're down with it.
Yeah.
They're down with the gay thing. And
they are
have,
so
you know,
down.
Like, you know, people will be able to get day passes to come into gay land. But there's no weapons allowed down there. We're gonna get to choose our rights, too, then.
That's right.
No guns, you know, no crime.
Right. And you know what I've never had is a Cuban, those Cuban sandwiches. No, I don't mean that. I meant a Cuban sandwich. Don't they call them Cubans?
I'm like, well, I have.
I've never eaten a Cuban, but.
I have. But, yeah, that would be great. I think that's a great idea.
All right, let's switch gears a little bit here.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought this was it.
So I hope that you enjoyed part one of this interview with the amazing Melissa Farrick. I hope that by now you've already left your comment with your top three favorite Melissa Farrick songs, and we will get that CD out to you. And so stay tuned for next week when I will post part two of this interview, where we talk about how pirating has affected her career and touring and sobriety, panic fits, and we will also reveal Melissa Farrick's porn name on the next show. How do I mend my heart? It's been wonderful to have you. Thank you very much for listening. And we will talk at you again very soon. Ta-ta, bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Your friend, damn you for not trying, and fuck you for standing there smiling. Yeah, but I know what it's like.